There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
You have found the Shanny Pants Show. Hello, it's Shanny, the least influential influencer that there ever was. With a heart full of laughter and a journey that runs deeper than the trendiest makeup You may know me from my ridiculously comedic fashion and makeup tutorials on social media, but guess what? There's so much more to the story. I was born, raised, and married in a cult. When I left the cult at 31 years old, I had no knowledge about real life or how to process what I had been through. I felt very alone. The past couple of years, I've been on an incredible journey of learning, growing, and recovering, and I'm excited to share this with you. I'll bring you stories from the Cultiverse, where many cult survivors and experts share their knowledge and experiences. Their stories are more than inspiring. They're a roadmap to self-discovery and resilience. So get ready for a podcast that's part comedy, part wisdom, and a whole lot of heart. If you feel alone in your journey, my hope is that that will change once you hear these stories. Welcome to the Shanny Pants Show. Okay, guys, here we are. We are back with part two, John and Shelley. And if you guys remember where we left off, John was being prayed for that his legs would be broken so that he would not be such a wayward child any longer. We had a good laugh about that. So we're coming in right now, having a good laugh about that and getting back to John and Shelley's story. I hope you guys enjoy the rest of the story as much as I do. And again, I cannot say enough how much fun we had recording this, or I had. Don't ask them.
Look at me now.
So, you turned out so fine. Oh my gosh. Oh, and that's just so, so sad that, and like you were saying, with no support, and this is obviously once you left, John, but even within, like, I know with people from Michael, I talk about this, but like, there was no mental, and I know like mental health is becoming a more, you know, normalized thing as far as like getting help and stuff now than it was when we were kids, but there was no resources. We didn't have counseling. We didn't have, the only thing you could do is go to the leader. Yep. If you had some, and you wouldn't want to, he was weird and awkward and you didn't trust him. So it was like, there was truly, like, I look back and there are so many adults and children, but so many that were depressed, living life day to day, just fully depressed. And I suffer from a lot of depression. And so like, I get it. And I'm like, wow, how sad. And no one had any resources. You were just like weak, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, you just need to pray about it and you'll That's be right. all right.
That's right. Every answer you need is in the good book. And if you can't find it there, the preacher will help you. And is the extent of therapy.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Well, that and Christian counselors that they train to send you to, like, you know, a mentor or whatever, that's not actually
qualified,
ever trained in anything. Right. Psychological. Yeah. So it's, it's exactly that way. That's exactly how it was. And I, you know, looking back, and we've had conversations with our mother about this, is that this, our speaking out, especially publicly, there's nothing that we are saying like, oh, you know, we're going to get back at you. That's not what this is.
Right.
What we believe now, I mean, I'm speaking for both of us, but I know this because we've had conversations, but is that the church also failed our mother. There were severe psychological needs that she had, and they were unmet because she was told that she needed to pray it away. And that's not fair. She did not get the help that she needed during the time that she needed.
And you just see what damage that does, you know? So she takes it out on John, or, and I don't know exactly, of course, why, but, you know, I can imagine just in my family, even, it's, you want that perfect family look, right? So if you have a kid that's straying or not doing the right things, well, we're going to beat it out of them, or, you know, do whatever, so that when we go to meeting, we all look perfect and we're all, you know, smiling and doing our thing. And so you're right. It does create that. Absolutely. And, and isn't that so sad? Like, you think, like, she probably feels like, oh, I'm a failure because my kids aren't perfect. And when we're just normal kids, you know, it's literally just, I can't imagine. We talk about this all the time. I cannot imagine raising my children how we were raised. No. I just, like, I cannot, like, I'm happy to get through each and every day. Like, if everyone is alive and I've tucked them in bed and I'm done, I'm like, we made it. We made it. When? I cannot imagine what we went through. And again, what our parents went through, because both my parents were born into our churches, our cult as well. But like, this was them dragging us to meetings on Wednesday night. They didn't want to do it either. And so they're making us do something that they don't even want to do. But you're so, yeah, it's so sad. And like you said, too, using John as an example, that's exactly what we did, too. And in the 80s, late 80s, I guess, we call it the split of the 80s, a large portion of people started questioning and, you know, kind of debating stuff and wanting, well, they ultimately got marked. And so it was like, you don't talk to them. You don't, if you see them in the grocery store, you don't make eye contact. Like, they literally are not a part of your life anymore. Well, part of the group that was marked was my dad's sister and her husband and family, who was his best friend, but my cousins. And I was really close to one of them in particular. And I was, I think I was around, no, I wouldn't have been nine. I don't know, like seven-ish probably when the split happened. And so all of a sudden this people disappear from my life as a young child. And I'm just like, what's going on? But I can remember praying, like you were talking earlier about praying. I forget what word you use, but it reminded me of, like, we were praying for them to get right with the Lord, you know, and praying. I don't remember praying that they would break their legs necessarily, but definitely praying, you know, that they would get right with the Lord. And then as a child, I can remember laying in bed and I was very anxious and praying that on my own that they would get right with the Lord, because I missed them and they were doing something wrong and I wanted to hang out with them, you know, as a little child. And then you just kind of start accepting it. And then as adults now, when I got out, I was 31. We have since reconnected and it's amazing. We're raising our kids together. Like, we live hours away from each other, but it's awesome that we at least have this opportunity that we can connect now. But how disgusting. Like, it literally just tears families apart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awful. Yeah. And then uses them, like you said, as examples.
Yeah. I mean, the worst, one of the worst times, well, one of the worst punishments they tried to give me was I got caught going to the movies and things. My dad was the oldest of six, and his youngest brother is only 2 years older than me. So I was my grandparents' first grandchild on his side.
Okay.
And so Scott and I grew up more like big brother, little brother. And so when I was 15, Scott took me to the movies for the first time because he was 17 and we could go to R-rated movies. And so the very first movie he ever took me to was Die Hard. And
oh yes,
right.
Such a good choice and for first movie.
He had already seen it, but he wanted to go back and see it with me. And like, I'll never forget, like, you know, because I had never been in a movie theater in my life, and I certainly had never seen a lot of the things that were in that movie. And I remember him being like, get ready. Make sure you watch. Cause you know, there was boobs about to be shown. And I was like, oh yeah. Okay. You know, and, but I got caught and, because I was writing letters to this girl that I was crushing on in Monmouth, Illinois, of all places. And, they read my letters, of course, because I had no privacy. They opened them up and read them. And that's how I ended up getting in trouble. But they tried to ground me from Scott for a year. And they also tried to ground me from my best friend, Mike, who is still my oldest and best friend to this day. They tried to ground me from him for a year. And after about a month, Dad said, well, I don't know if it's right for me to ground you from family. And so he lifted that. And then it took another month or so. And I think it was finally Mike came up to my dad at church and just was like, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to do this and corrupt John. And like went off on this crazy apology. And my dad was finally like, all right, you can see Mike again, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, he repented.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it takes.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, even if it's false, you know.
Come on. There was nothing real about that apology.
We were in Mike's room the next week listening to NXS. So it's, you know, it's fine. Whatever.
Oh my gosh. Now I have a question, going back a little bit to your mom and her abuse of you. Was your dad aware of this? Or did she do it kind of privately?
You know, I always thought he was. He certainly knew that we fought. And she had no problem screaming at me in front of him. But looking back on it, it's obvious to me now that she didn't really hit me in front of him. She would probably like slap me or backhand me, you know, in front of him every once in a while. But like the real beatings, those never really happened when he was around. And this happened for me when I was 33. Shout out to Jesus. But it happened to me when I was 33. I was back home. Well, I was not home. My dad had a church in Arkansas at the time, and I was visiting them, and I was there for a little while. And my mom and I have had this relationship where she would ask me, or we would talk about the abuse, and she would cry. And she would apologize, and it could literally be the next day, or maybe not even a few hours later, doesn't matter. And then she would say something like, oh, I wasn't that bad. And so it was this really whiplashy sort of thing that I would have with her. And this went on for a number of years. And so I was at their house in Arkansas, and I was sitting there in a chair in this den sort of area. And my mom was lying on the couch and her feet were on my dad's lap. And my dad was giving her a foot massage. And she had one of those moments. And at that point in my life, I was like, nope, you don't get to do this anymore. Screw you. This is what you did to me. And I called her out. And again, she cried and cried and cried. And my dad just sat there. And mind you, the whole time, never once did he stop massaging her feet while I'm telling all of this story. But he just had this look on his face of disbelief. And I looked at him and I said, what are you looking at me like that for? I said, in my mind, you were complicit, dude. And my dad, again, never stopped massaging mom's feet, even while he said this to me, said to me, oh, John, if I would have known the extent, my relationship with your mother would have been vastly different. And I was like, shit. And I believed him. But I also realized like, oh yeah, right. You probably weren't around for those really bad beatings. You only saw her scream and yell at me. And even when she would scream and yell at me, I think dad was scared of her just as much as all of us were scared of her. But he would let it go on to a certain point, and then finally he would get upset. Rarely did he get out of his recliner for it, but he did get upset and tell us to knock it off. But I guess he really didn't understand the extent to which she was really hitting me.
Because, yeah, I don't think so. And,
yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you please.
Oh, I was just going to say that I think also that he didn't quite understand the dynamic of when he would just step back and like sing. There's a song called, what's the name of it? Oh, there's a sweet, sweet spirit in this place. Mm. And he would step back and just like start singing in the corner while, you know, the chaos was starting on to diffuse the situation. And then finally my mom would be like, hear him and like laugh and, you know, things would be.
But also you tell the story of what he used to do too in the car, because I didn't know this.
In the car?
Like he would get in his car and drive or whatever. Like,
yeah. Oh yeah.
He just told me this not too long ago. And I was like, what? I was in the middle of getting yelled at or beaten.
A fight. Right.
I had other things on my mind, Shelley.
Yes. But I don't think he understood the impact of those tactics of like belittling the fact that this was like constant abuse going on. And he was just trying to be like, ha ha, it's all peace and love here. Let's just stop and make everybody happy. Or he would check out. So he would literally protest, you know, and leave. And what he didn't realize was like, we were left. We were still in it. And
he left the rest of the kids.
Yeah. So he would just give mom time to cool down. And it's like, oh, but like we were the ones that she was, you know, directing all of this at. And so when he would come back, she would be apologetic and he would be like, you know, okay, that's fine, but just like chill out, okay? And it would not be okay for us, but I don't think that he ever saw it because he would be gone. So, you know, and we actually did have a recent conversation with our mom about this, and I was like, y'all don't give dad a pass. Like, I love him. Like, I was closest to my dad growing up, and he's no longer with us, but like, not to speak ill of the dead, but bro,
it's he had
like
his
we
part.
Were all there. We were all there.
Dad, I mean, look, Arielle and I got married a year ago, and we were up in central California last year. And we were sitting at dinner with Arielle's parents. And this was like the last planning trip I think we had for the wedding. And we were at dinner at this restaurant. In fact, Arielle and I just were up there eating dinner on Sunday night. And it was funny to me to be there again because I hadn't been there since this moment. But I started crying at dinner because we were talking about all of this stuff. And Arielle's mom said to me, you know, are you okay? Like, what's going on? And I said, you know, I think I just realized how much of a coward my dad was. And I hadn't really thought about it that way. But I think he was. Dad was very much a pacifist. I mean, went to the point where I was studying Kenpo karate when I ran away, and I was being such a belligerent shit. But I was so angry at my mom, and we were fighting again, of course, because that's all we ever did. And Dad said something about your mother this and that, and I said, oh, you mean your wife? And I would not call her mom. I would not call her my mother. I just kept saying, your wife is doing this. Your wife did this. And he got so pissed off at me. And the whole family was in the basement. And he grabbed me in a headlock because he got so pissed off at me. And it was only one of two or three times that he's ever really physical in that way. I mean, he spanked the shit out of me. Don't get me wrong. But in that way. And he looked at everybody. He said, everybody get upstairs now. And everybody's crying. Everybody's freaking out. Everybody goes upstairs and it's just me and Dad. And I look up at my dad. He's got me in this headlock. And I look up at him like this. And I said, you let me go right now or I'm going to hurt you. And he was like, yeah, okay. Like he knew. Because he knew I would hurt him. But he was a bit of a coward, and I think he, you know, it was that moment where it dawned on me of like, oh man, Dad was a coward. Dad didn't really stand up to Mom. Dad didn't really stand up to much of anything. You know, he was such a pacifist in that way. You know, and God bless him for it, I suppose. But, you know, I could have used a little help here and there.
Right.
But
yeah, I mean, I had moments of that anger too after like he died, and I was looking for some stuff online. So Dad was a poet and just a beautiful, prolific writer.
Really?
And I was looking for some stuff. I can't remember why, but I found this published poem by my father. And it was just very affirming of like liberal views.
Yeah.
And I was like, I am so angry right now because I don't even know my dad.
Yeah.
Like that, the man I trusted and was closest to, and you know, just so many things running through my mind of like, he hid this from us, but he wouldn't have been safe in his community.
Right.
And so like John said, you just see this like cowardice come through, and you know, can I blame him? No, probably not. I just like, what kind of support would he have had?
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know, but it's just maddening. It makes me angry that that was our experience because of, you know, his.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. He pulled me aside one day. Actually, we took a drive one day and I forget where we went, but we stopped somewhere. And he was like, I just really need to tell you something. I need to confess something. And I was like, okay. And he told me, because dad, before he became a preacher, he sold furniture. And so he worked in the furniture business a lot. And he ended up getting recruited by this guy, Mike, who his business was helping furniture businesses go out of business. I know that's very convoluted sounding.
Yeah,
that's fun. But he would, if somebody wanted to go out of business, he would come in and he would do all their going out of business sales, and he would help them structure it all and figure it all out and plan it and figure out pricing and all that stuff and advertising and everything. And he just, he fell in love with my dad. And so he recruited my dad to come work for him. So my dad traveled through the Midwest a bit for a while, closing out businesses. And he ended up in Monmouth, Illinois for a few months. Which is where I ended up writing that girl and, you know, making out with her in a van, even though mom and dad didn't know it. And so
hurry here first.
But dad like gets real serious, starts crying his fucking eyes out, and tells me that he went to see Pretty Woman in a movie theater because he just was so tempted and couldn't help himself. And I was like, okay. Cool, man. Cool.
Another great choice.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
the way movies go, you guys are choosing well.
But it was just wild to me that he was that upset. And I remember when he died, you know, because, you know, you try to process and cope with that shit the best you can. And, you know, it hit me pretty hard because it was, you know, it was an accidental death. It was unexpected. He was 57, 58, something. Yeah. Yeah. And so I came out of nowhere and, you know, so you're dealing with all of that stuff. But I remember walking around the place I used to live when it happened, just having conversations with him. And my true feeling is that, as I would say to him then, was I don't think you believed everything that you pretended. And I wonder what you see now. I wonder what you think and see now that you're on the other side of it. Like, where were you right? Where were you wrong? But my feeling was you didn't believe everything the way that we were supposed to believe it. I just think he was, again, too scared. But also, you know, you look at what happened with me and the way that I was, you know, not supported in any of that stuff, then he would not have been either. And I think
the same,
I think it's real. I mean, as human beings, you know how it's why does somebody stay in an abusive relationship? Because that's what they know. They're too afraid to get themselves out because what's on the other side of getting out is so unknown that sometimes the known is more comfortable. And I think that was the same with dad and his faith and in that religion. Because there were moments where he would do things like go see Pretty Woman at a movie theater, or he would say certain things or express things in a way, or we find a poem years later. I mean, I'll never forget Shelley sending that to me, and we're both like, what is this? You know,
wow.
But just knowing that he would not have I don't know what I don't think he knew what would be on the other side of that for him. And, but I don't, I think it was just such a groove for him at that point in his life. He didn't know how to get out of it.
Yeah.
I think he created so much of a life of his own. He was very contemplative and stoic and, you know, he loved philosophy and he created kind of like what we did as children. He, you know, he did that as an adult and was able to, like, he was literally when, you know, forums and chat rooms were being portrayed as like only perps and, you know, pedophiles are in those, you know, on movies and stuff. Like our dad was in writing and poetry forums and he won a publishing deal because he was voted the best poet and all this stuff. So like, and this was early 2000s, like And so I think that he had a place where he considered himself safe and kept him sane. But yeah, it's just, it's sad looking back and realizing how much more we could have shared specifically, you know, with John and that distance. And I think one thing that I was thinking about when you were talking about in yours, in your cult, there were marked people. I think something that is distinct about the IFB is that there is no actual either spoken or unspoken ritual or thing that we talk about with excommunication. You are all obviously like everyone always sees people being held up as examples, right? And being preached about. So you internalize that obviously, like if I ever do that, like I remember, here's another thing I thought about when you were talking about your prayer as a child, I remember praying as a child that God would kill me rather than bring shame to his name. Like, because that's what was, you know, like preached, like you, that you would be better off dead than, you know, doing this. And so, you know, just those types of things are internalized. And then like when you leave or when someone disagrees, right? So for example, John, he left, there was no excommunication. They were actually encouraged to keep the lines of communication open because we are praying him back, right? God will humble him so that he will humble himself. And so the practice is that you just make a relationship untenable for the individual who has left because then they have to create boundaries that sever a relationship. So it's weird, convoluted, like excommunication tactic that is like so covert. But it's literally what happens to so many people. And that the fact that John experienced that really with my dad in particular, that he was, you know, not able to have those few years with him, is one of the sadder things, I think.
And they were when he passed away, what he was still part of the church.
He had his own church in Arkansas then.
Yeah, and we were adults when dad like started working full time for the IFB.
Wow. Oh my gosh. And what about your mom? Is she still involved now too then?
Yeah. I mean, as far as I know, she still goes to an IFB church.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Have you been sending her like the new documentary? Like
no,
I mean, she follows us on social media.
That's true.
Yeah, she knows, but we don't. We don't really send her that stuff. I mean,
no, I'm joking. I know.
No, but I mean, look, we've had multiple conversations with her. Most recently, this summer, we had a conversation with her that was very different from any other conversation we've had to this point with her, and it was encouraging to both Shelley and I. We were both sort of surprised that she wanted to talk first, and second, how she received that talk. Where, again, like I said, Shelley and I talked about how we have this whiplash experience with her, where she'll acknowledge things and then kind of go back the other way the next morning or whatever it might be. And but she's always been very defensive anytime we've critiqued the IFB or the people in the IFB. And this time was very different. She wasn't defensive at all. She listened. She seemed to understand things for the first time in a way that we've never really seen her grasp. And you know, Shelley's was really great about the way she spoke to mom and how she sort of illuminated it for her, so that she could hear it and could receive it. But yeah, I mean, that's the first time I ever remember her not bristling when we said cult.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And even some of the claims, you know, like, well, this is what was preached or taught. And like, I didn't hear that, you know, like it was, oh, you know, it was more of a like, really? Yeah. And then I think she started to see a few things or remember, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It was encouraging.
It was an interesting conversation. Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How, Shelley, when did you get out?
That's a complicated question for me.
If you need to go, we could just cut it off. And
No.
Okay.
So I think that, you know, you can take the girl out of the cult, but not the cult out of the girl so easily.
Yeah.
So yeah, after John had, you know, left, I, like I said, I just kind of hunkered down. And because of my experience as, you know, a child of sexual abuse, I actually came forward at a teen youth camp and told my story because it was the first time that I actually understood that what they were preaching against, i.e. sex, was actually what had happened to me. And I'd never put the two together because, you know, there's no sex education.
Right.
And so I'm like sitting there mortified thinking, what is my, you know, lot in life at this point? And so I shared that with a youth leader who.
Well, also I want to say, because they were telling you that that made you a whore.
Oh yeah. Right? Like the preaching preaching from the pulpit was like, you know, whore, Jezebel, seductress, temptress, all of these words.
You were probably wearing pants or something and you tempted them.
I mean, not, but I was five. So,
Oh my gosh.
Right. So, you know, you're just like, your mind is reeling. Yeah. And, you know, I've said this to John before, but it's like, we were always taught that like our righteousness is as filthy rags. Like you literally feel like you're a dirty piece of trash. And so this is the one time I am sitting there thinking like, oh, like this makes me a dirty piece of trash. And so I wanted to like, you know, I didn't always feel like a dirty piece of trash. I did have some self-worth in my life, you know, as a child. Right. Yeah. And so I think we all do. I think we were born with it and you feel that and you want to fight for that. Right. Mm. And so that's what was going on. And I shared my story. And protocol, of course, demanded that she take me to the pastor. And I relayed my story to a man whom I didn't trust. And it just snowballed from there. Like by the time we got home, well, on the bus ride, I wasn't even allowed to sit next to the girls on the bus in case I would bring up an inappropriate subject. And so I was basically sitting next to the pastor's wife the whole ride home. And then once we got to the parking lot, I saw that my parents' car was there, which is like normal. They were there to pick us up, but then we were called, both parents were there and we were called into the office. And then I was not in a state to tell my story. So basically the pastor retold it because I was weeping to my parents for the first time. Mm-hmm. All right. And so from then on, I was just treated very, very differently. And so my goal really would be to like find that sense of self-worth again. And I found that by like really leaning into the rules and trying to like give up sneaking around and wearing pants or, you know, the rock music or whatever. And so I ended up going to the Bible college. And I met my husband there. He did not grow up in it, but interestingly, he grew up under the harshest, I mean, I guess that's objective, but one of the harshest regimes of Eastern European communism in Romania. Yeah. And so when he came to the college, because basically he was persuaded to come there by a person who had gone into the country of Romania when communism fell, and my husband already knew English, so he was a translator, and they were like, come to America, we'll pay for everything. And so he enrolled at the college, we met there, and thankfully he didn't grow up in it, and he thought it was like Christian communism. That's what he told them. And he left after our first year because his parents wouldn't let him leave in the middle of the year. And and I called him when he didn't come back, and I was like, where are you? What is happening? Anyway, long story short, you know, he came back and we got married and I finished college there and we moved to Romania, to his home country in 1999. And I lived there for almost 15 years. And it was really there that like, I had a clean break, I think, from the cult, right? When we left, there's just... I'm sure there are some independent fundamental Baptists there, but I didn't know them. And so, yeah, it was just like I saw a new culture, a new life, a new world, a different type of Christianity that was like just normal, you know? And so I just little by little started pulling at the threads, I think. And like I said, finding my own self-worth as I went, not that it was easy. I did have, I don't even know what you call it. I guess a breakdown of some sort. When
you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I turned 30, I believe, and ended up just getting so many tests in the hospital. And finally, you know, somebody told me it's probably psychological. And it probably was, but it manifested as, you know, some physical symptoms. And it was really then that I was like, oh my God, I was raised in a cult, you know? During that time, I was like looking for people on Facebook, girls that I went to college with, because, you know, back then in college, we didn't have Facebook or anything. So I was reconnecting with people while living overseas and just like looking at their profiles. Are they wearing pants? Oh, are they safe? Can we talk about this? And so, right. Yeah, that's basically how it all kind of played out.
Wow. And now you live back in the States, though.
Yeah.
Okay. And how was that coming back? Did you still feel, I'm sure it was adjustment no matter what, but did you still feel like, I don't feel like I have to go right back and connect with my past far as like religion goes?
Yes. Well, gosh, it broke up a little bit for me there. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So coming back to the States was, oh, wow. Yeah, it was reverse culture shock, I think, for me, because I was coming back to my own country, and yet I had lived within my country as a subculture, and so I didn't really know how to live as a real American at times, I feel like. My kids had never grown up here. Of course, we had always visited, but it was a big, big adjustment, and, you know, the only experience I ever had was working within a church, and so... you know, or schools. Mm. So I applied for jobs in churches and schools and, just kind of tried to fall into like, some kind of normal Midwestern existence. Mm-hmm. Yeah. but even that was, you know, challenging working within a system, because I did get a job at a church and, ran the preschool department. And so, and just being back within that structure, like overseas, there's, I'm sure there are mega churches But like, you know, we weren't involved in any of them. And here, you know, being involved in a church of thousands and, you know, the bureaucracy and hierarchy and patriarchy and all the things, it's like, oh man, this isn't for me. I knew within a few months I stayed for 3.5 years, but
That's very hard. Now, do you go to church now?
Or I don't.
You don't. Okay. Yeah.
No, my husband's very like still very much a believer, very faithful. But I can't attend. I mean, I'll go for Christmas or, you know, some things, and I'll attend on occasion, but it's just like with the systematic institution.
Yeah.
I'm just like,
so hard.
I don't see myself ever going back, but I've also watched myself, become the person I prayed I would never. So I don't want to say that I would never go back.
Right. Right.
But like, if things don't change,
mm-hmm.
like if people don't start paying attention, which I've found a lot of resistance, even to some of the things that I'm working on now, it's like, I'm speaking out and I'm like, I hope that you church people are paying attention. I'm not telling you to stop going to church. I've never once said that.
Right. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
But like, how can you treat people better? Isn't that what we're supposed to be talking about? Because that's why I don't feel welcome at church, because I did start to talk about those things at church. And then I was not really accepted. And so like, why would I want to go back?
No. Right. But right. Isn't it amazing to have that freedom too, to be like, oh, I'm going to try. Bye. Like that to me is so freeing, is just to have the freedom to make our own choice. And
absolutely. And it should be, and it should always be that way.
Right.
Like without condition.
Right. Right.
You know?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Okay. So you have a couple kiddos though?
Me, I have 3.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes. No. And a granddaughter.
Oh my gosh. You're not old enough to be a grandma.
I mean, you know, I grew up in a cult. I started young. So.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. That is true. How old were you when you got married?
I was 20.
Okay. I mean, yeah. John obviously was like geriatric by the time he got married. He didn't do it the right way.
I mean, see what happens when you're outside of the will of God.
Listen, I chalk it up to not trusting institutions in general for a very long time.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yep. Yeah. Well, and I've met your wife and
it took me a while was worth to get the
wait. There. Yeah, she was definitely worth the wait.
I really, really like her. I can't wait to see you all again. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, same.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Anything else? I mean, I could talk to you guys forever. But could anything else you just want to share? Kind of, actually, I would love you to each maybe take a second just to kind of talk about where you're at now as far as like your healing process and just like, you know, obviously we're all talking about this. So, you know, where are you at now kind of?
You want to go ahead?
Okay, sure.
oldest first again.
Sure.
Well, I've been talking a while.
Yeah. No problem. Need a break.
Well, you know, look, I mean, it's a long journey. Therapy's been a great help. I've done a couple of different iterations of a one-man show about my experiences telling stories. This October, where I got up on stage to tell stories, I think in 7 years. So, you know, that's something that I like a lot and I'm pursuing again. I will put together another show, you know, but Shelley and I have written a TV series based upon how we grew up. It's a fictionalized version, obviously. We gave ourselves money in that show instead of being poor, you know, things like that.
Yes.
But you know, we've done that kind of thing. And I, you know, I think that, by the way, in the very opening scene of the TV pilot, the character based on Shelley gets shit for wearing pants. I just want you to know.
Where can I watch this?
Well, you can't watch
it. Well, it's not been bought
it's
yet.
Written. Oh. It's written. It's not been,
oh, no,
it's not
I
been
want
sold
it.
Or filmed. It's been written.
Oh man.
But yeah, so, you know, I think, those are the kinds of things that telling stories that way, connecting with other people like you, you know, writing a TV show based on our experience growing up, all of those sorts of things really just help with kind of processing it, figuring it out. You know, and again, like Shelley said, for a long, long time, that was really tough. I had zero resources. I had zero help, zero support. And that was a long journey, a very angry journey for me personally. Even Shelley and I didn't talk for a number of years because I felt like I had lost my best friend and my sister to the cult. And it was only when we started working on the TV show that Shelley hit me hard with this idea that I had never considered before and didn't know because I'd never asked, which was, she said, "No, John, do you understand that I went deeper into it because that's how I had to protect myself? You had to get out of it. I had to go the other way because that was the only way I could see to be safe." And I was like, fuck, like that broke my heart, you know? But, so I think it's just a matter of just finding these things, finding these places to express it and, you know, work through it in those ways. And that, you know, hopefully keeps me sane, or at least saner than I would be, I suppose. I don't know how sane I am, but whatever. Got a great partner, great support system in her. And, you know, anytime I get wonky, she really helps straighten me out and keep me on track. And, you know, she also brings a really wonderful perspective. She's a very empathetic person. And she really helps me find different perspectives to see things through and you know, become better and stronger because of it. So,
yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I love that. Yeah. I'm so glad. Happy for you.
Thanks.
So glad. And Shelley, I mean, we kind of touched on where you're at, but you're doing good in recovery and all of that stuff.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's such a journey, you know, and I feel like there are a lot of people who wonder like, oh, well, where do you land and all this? And I just feel like I am still soaring.
Yeah. At this point. Yeah.
You know, I just like the ride, the drift. And, I do have a good support system, especially, you know, working with John and my husband is amazing. My kids are really supportive. I am also working on a novel. It'll be out this April.
Yay.
Called The Cheating Wife. And it definitely has the theme, the same type of theme of how women are treated in the system. And so look for my, you know, F the Patriarchy book coming in April. Yes.
Oh my gosh.
So I think that being able to feel free just to even have these conversations and do this type of work and have the support and still feel safe is very healing for me.
Yeah. And, you know, I also, Shani, I want to say too, like, because I understand we're on a journey and, you know, I don't know where your listeners are or where, you know, where they might be in their own journey. And I just want to make it clear, like, we're 30 years removed, right? From I'm 30 years removed from that moment of running away and getting out of the cult. And that doesn't mean that I'm done. And that doesn't mean that I have it all figured out and I still struggle with so many things and, you know, not feeling worthy or deserving or feeling dirty or shame. And the way that it was ingrained in me is something I still struggle with even as an artist. And, you know, I can feel paralyzed when I get an audition or I'm trying to write something and making a choice and figuring out how do I want to embody this? How do I want to portray this? How do I want to do X, Y, or Z? Because I have all these thoughts, I have all these ideas, but then that old programming of you're not good enough, you're not deserving, you're not worthy, you know, not feeling smart enough or because that it turns you into a people pleaser. And then you start thinking, well, what did they want to see from me in this audition rather than how do I want to express this audition? And so it's still a struggle for me even today. And I think I'm mostly well adjusted, but I think that it still pops up. It's still, that is still my battle within my own creativity. And so I don't want to give the impression either that we've done this stuff and we're great now. We're fine. Like it's all fucking done. Like, move on. Suck it up, sucker. You're good.
Yeah.
It's not that at all. It is truly a daily and individual battle. Every single time I sit down or stand up or whatever to do any sort of creative work. And there are other ways that it manifests in my life too, but you know, it's that's still there. And that's still something that has to be overcome. And that's still a process and a journey. And so even 30 years in, and I know we were talking with Eric Swarzynski once, and he was kind of sad that it, like, 30 years later, I'm still figuring shit out, but I don't want that's just life. I think that's all
it's
of
the reality.
That's
yeah.
just life. And like, you just accept that that is part of life. And, yeah. You know, but again, I hope that it's uplifting and encouraging mm-hmm. and not depressing that, you know, to me, it's exciting now. Now it's a curiosity. I get to go, okay, so what is that exactly? Why do I feel that way? Why is that thought playing in my mind right now? And mm-hmm. not how do I banish it, but how do I make friends with it? Mm-hmm. How do I sit down with all that bullshit, that mm-hmm. little critic that gets so loud in my mind that I know comes from all of those people and all mm-hmm. of those teachings that they tried to instill in me? Not how do I get rid of them? How do I sit down and say, hey, dude, what's up? How do I make this better for you? How do we become friends? How can we work together? How can we become collaborators rather than competitors? And, you know, that as long as I stay curious about that guy, then I'm good. I can figure it out. And I think that's where the sweet spot is, because I don't know you ever get rid of this shit, honestly.
Yeah. And it's not easy when you're not as far removed from the black and white yes. thinking of, you know, it's either or.
Right.
To see that it is freedom, it is exciting, like you said, to be able to view those choices. So it's a little bit scary still, I think, when you're a lot younger or it's newer
right.
to you. And when you do have some of that distance from it, it just is kind of like exercising that muscle, strengthening that, you know, to not let it freak you out as much. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's still coming. We're still like, you know, like I said, I reserve the right to change my mind. I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like that's not scary to me anymore. The fact that I don't know and that there are other options.
Because the reality is it's all unknown. And it depends on how you choose to look at the unknown, because the unknown is and can be scary. But also the unknown, the way I choose and try to see it now, even though this is still a fucking struggle all the time, but the way I try to look at it now is that the unknown also contains every single possibility that exists. So that's exciting, because you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know how things will turn out. And there is something exciting in that rather than being scary. And it just depends on how you choose to perceive that. And just trying to work more towards, oh, this is exciting, and getting more away from that scary and just going, no, but I can embrace all the possibilities if I choose to, rather than I'm so focused on the unknown that there's this one thing that's going to fuck me up so bad. You know, and that's, to me, like I said, just staying curious in that is where the freedom is, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Right. It's still work.
Still an effort.
And I've said this a million times, but I think so many people get out of a cult situation and then they're out and life's great, you know? And like John, maybe like you struggle, you don't have the support, you don't have the resources to heal from any of that or, you know, process any of it. And I think for so many, I'm thinking of people that got out when I did, get out and then it's done. And for me, that's how it was too, until like 3 years ago, when I'm like, why does this stuff keep coming up? This is so weird. And it's like, oh, because I haven't dealt with it yet. Right. I see how this works. Yeah. And so it is, I think, and I love what you said, John, about when you're trying to be in your creative mind and how sometimes you'll freeze or you can't, you said something about that where you just kind of.
Yeah, kind of get paralyzed. Yeah.
Yes, paralyzed. Yeah. And I relate with that. When you said that, I'm like, oh my gosh, yes. Because I do the same thing. And it's almost like I just want to pretend like it's not there and just like disappear from it and ignore it, because it might be hard or it might not go the way I want it to go, rather than just have to be the surprise. Like, who knows what it could be? I really love that you said that. That was like really impactful for me, because I tend to be very like anxious and I can go either way. Yeah. I'm just a mix of all the feelings.
I get it. I mean, look, I forget what I was going to say. Never mind. I forgot. Yeah, I lost it.
Yay. I'm not the only one that does that.
I got it.
Here we go.
The ways that I've been able to express and the way that I've been able to create are just literally like the tiniest tip of the iceberg. Like if you knew the amount of things in here or in here,
yeah, there you go.
that I have, that I want to express and or create that I haven't done yet because I'm nervous, afraid, scared, terrified, whatever it is. Like if I ever get cut loose, watch the fuck out. Like it's all like, it's just, you know, and that's,
we're waiting.
That's the game that I play now, which is right. Okay, cool. How do I open that up a little further? How do I, you know, express that a little deeper? How do I reveal a little bit more of what's in here? Because, you know, I get so nervous and scared and anxious about all of it. Always.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's where I think platforms like this are so great. And I mean, that's why I started the podcast. And like you said, I wanted to have a podcast forever, but I'm like, no, I'm not a podcast person. I'm very uneducated. I have terrible vocabulary. I make words up. And so I'm like, no, I a lot. I'm like, I can't do a podcast.
Rebuccal anyone?
Because in my mind.
Yeah, exactly.
But I wanted it to be perfect. So I'm like, I'll really polish everything up and all. And then finally I'm like, no, you just get on there and you start recording stuff because what I really wanted was a platform for people to share their stories. And I'm so glad I stuck with it because I did take like a year off for a like long depressive episode. So that was fun, but I'm glad I came back. But just like you, John, see, there's a lot of,
well, look, I was going to say there. You of all people saw how incredibly anxious and nervous I was because I was backstage. Like, what the fuck am I, how am I going to end these pieces? How am I going to, I don't even know what I'm finished. It wasn't finished. I didn't know how I was going to say what I was going to say on stage up to the moment I walked out the fucking door to go on stage. And then I got backstage and it was like, it happened. Great.
It was great.
Yeah, it was so good. Like your performance was fantastic. Oh, it was, and I got to listen to it from the back because I was still back in the room. But your smack when you did, I was like, "Oh, we're awake. We hear you."
Man,
that was intense. Man. It was so good.
Did you notice on the Let Us Pray documentary, John, where it might have been Hiles who did that smack?
Yes. Oh my gosh. And it triggered me. Like it didn't trigger me.
Did it?
No, it didn't trigger me, but like I felt the emotion because the thing, I don't know if I told you this, Shani, when I you know, talked about like, you know, it was that.
Can we give just a little context? Cause we're having conversations.
Oh, yeah, we sure are. Thank you, Shelly, for keeping
it. So I did two pieces and I talked about how it was impressed upon me that a child was supposed to be seen and not heard. And as I was rehearsing, when we did this sort of run through before the actual show, I decided to smack my hand to sort of intimate that I was physically abused. And I kind of did it, you know, like that. And I was like, it was impressed upon me. But for whatever reason, when I got up on stage during the actual show, I smacked my hand so fucking hard. I had to take a moment. Like it was just a brief breath, but I had to take a moment because me smacking my hand so forcefully almost made me start crying on stage, which is interesting because I have found actually as an actor, when I need to cry, if I need to cry in a certain scene, if I can find a violent sort of action that I can do that's within myself, obviously, not put on another actor.
Smack another people.
Yeah, just beat the shit out of them. I want to beat the fuck out of you for this scene. Cool.
But look, I'm crying. It worked.
No, I first found this when I was in college and I had a scene. I was in a play and I was in an argument with my partner in the play and I had a trash can in my hand and I slammed the trash can down and it made me start crying. And I was just like, oh, that's interesting. Mm. And so I've noticed if I can do so. So when I hit my hand in that story, man, I was just like, And so when I saw Let Us Pray and I saw Jack Hyles do that, I was just like, again, I felt all of that emotion from being on stage and me smacking my hand and everything else. And whew, man.
And for me, it was very validating watching and seeing that the way that we internalize the messages were exactly how they were being presented.
Right.
Oh, it was, it was such a good performance. And then Shelly, we haven't even talked about your performance. Like, oh my gosh. Like,
it's pretty great.
If anyone would like to go look up her on YouTube and find some of her amazing, it's not a quartet, right?
So no, I'm actually in a barbershop chorus and I asked a few of the women, just to perform with me because I couldn't figure out how to end mine. And then I was like, wait a minute, I know what I'm going to do. So yeah,
that was amazing. That was
the song.
So amazing. The song was great. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh,
couldn't have picked a better band, by the way. I remember them preaching about Queen as a child.
I had no idea who they were
talking about, but I just remember a preacher saying something about the song Tie Your Mother Down. And he was so upset by the song Tie Your Mother Down. And of course, as a kid, I'm like, oh, that's fucking ridiculous. So why would they, you know, like, I had no idea what the fuck they were talking about. And now I absolutely love Queen. I think they're absolutely amazing. So you Queen was really pretty righteous in my book.
I mean, I actually had the idea for that because I just, the song, when I went to chorus for the first time, because it was my first time back to like anything musical. And so I was like, I don't know how I'll do
And to be fair, Shelly, this needs to be clarified too, I think, that Shelly was actually in a traveling singing group through the IFB so that she would go around to other churches around the country and perform. So,
and recruit.
And recruit. Yes.
My God. So, and I was like, I don't know. I'll try. My friend invited me because I was like, oh, I used to be a singer, whatever. And she's like, what do you mean? You should come. And it's like, it is so pitch perfect, though. The group is amazing. Anyway, so I get there and they started singing Somebody to Love. And I was like, I am so in. Like, if I can sing for the love.
The first time you went. Harmony. That's the song they were singing.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So it was not. It was not triggering. I mean, there were a few moments, actually. I actually had a conversation with the director and I was like, so I want you to know a little bit of my history. Mm-hmm. I might get some triggers. This is why. If I have to leave, you know, this is why. And so she was very gracious and understood completely. And so I did have a few moments, but I've just like, it's amazing and I love it so much. But Queen, I was like,
Of course.
That's meant for me.
So amazing. So amazing.
Oh, well, thank you. We had so much fun. I'm so grateful that they came out and supported me.
Where do they all live? Do they all live where you live now?
Yes. We are a local chorus and we actually won the category for our district, which is like 6 states, I think.
Nice. Oh my gosh, that's awesome. I didn't know that.
Awesome. That is so exciting. Yes. And I'll have to put some links in the show notes because when I, you know, learned that you guys were going to be there and all this stuff, I had to go, I think it was because when I was organizing the layout of the show. And so I was like, who is this girl? And I looked you up on YouTube and I think it was with the bigger group, the whole chorus.
Yes.
Oh, I was just dying. I'm like, whoa, these people know what they're doing.
We go to internationals this summer too. So gonna have so much fun.
Nice. It's gonna be great. Nice.
Oh, that is so exciting. And it is so pitch perfect. When you guys were hanging out in the green room, I'm just like, oh, I can see because you guys are so fun.
Yeah.
And then John was over there breathing, you know, and stressing me out.
Man, sorry.
John has his process.
No, it was great. It was so it was so neat for me to see really honestly everyone in the, you know, green room. Everyone's process, you know, is I love that because again, from background, it's like we're all the same. We all do the same thing, say the same. So seeing still for me, even being out as long as I have, that variety and like, this is okay that someone needs to do this. Mm. This is okay that someone needs to do this. I don't know. It was the whole experience was so wonderful for me and just so happy. Like, I mean, so random too. And like, what am I a part of now? Like, this is crazy. And not any way ever did I think my life was going down this direction. And now I'm like,
now you're stuck with us.
Yes.
And now, and now we've got this friendship. So
yes, I love it. I love it. I'm so grateful that you guys hung out with me today.
Thanks.
And I really appreciate it. I love that you guys do this together. I know originally when I asked you guys to be on the podcast, you had asked like, can we do it together? We like to do it. And I'm so glad you do because I think it's so neat. And even like hearing John, like, I didn't know that. Like, it just reminds me of like hanging out with my siblings. So I'm glad that you guys do this together. I think that that works really nice. And I'm just very thankful that you joined me and hung out for quite a while today. Can't wait to see you guys again.
Yeah. Oh, same.
Thank you, Danny. Mm-hmm. And it would not have been the same without you.
Oh, well, thank you. It was amazing.
Yeah. So thank you.
You're welcome. I was honored, honestly. Honored to help. And you know what it is? It's kind of, you know, I think we even talked about this a little bit when we were there. It's hard when you come from our backgrounds of that cultiness to even form a group and not be culty. Mm. And I think it was just a wonderful experience for all, I mean, I think for all of us to kind of figure that out a little bit. And I just thought it went beautifully. You know, obviously there's things we all learned and what could be different, but I thought, wow, what a neat, completely different backgrounds, completely different journeys we're all on now.
Yeah.
And yet we can all come together and, you know, hopefully really we're just bringing our stories to other survivors and other people. And gosh, what an amazing experience. Like, it's crazy to me that we even did that. Like, it was so amazing. So amazing.
Yeah.
Can't wait for next year.
I know.
I'm so excited.
Hope it's the hope.
It'll be at my house. It's fine.
Yeah. There we go. See, yeah. I mean, your front yard. There we go.
Free venue. Got it.
Yes. Perfect. Ooh. Yeah. I'm liking the sounds of this. My house isn't big enough. Otherwise, we could go, Northern California.
Neither is ours.
That's all right. We can have a real intimate time.
People don't mind sitting on each other's laps, right?
Right.
Yeah.
That's not culty.
Definitely, I was going to say definitely not culty.
Welcome to the show. Here's a robe.
Right. Here's your sash. And here's your skirt.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, my God.
Shani has enough of those dresses.
I do. I've got a good pile of dresses. You know what I need to do, though? And I actually was thinking about it. Not that I wasn't into this conversation, but I had that because I'm so ADHD. I had it off in my head. That I need to like actually try to make a pair of culottes. Like that might be a fun little video.
It might be first of all
me sewing. And then what they would look like. Cause honestly, they're not, it's not like you're making them to be cute. They're just modest. So I could do that, I feel like.
Super, just modest.
Super modest.
Super modest. Men's gonna sin looking at me.
No.
Be held accountable.
There really will not be any sinning with culottes. I mean,
oh, I guarantee you that there has been. There's been sin because of culottes. Because that you could tell, John, here's the thing. It's a real slippery slope, right? And now all of a sudden, you know that women have full legs. But seriously, thanks guys for being here.
Yeah.
This was super fun. I'm glad that you just like got to hang out so long with me.
Yeah.
And I had nothing planned.
Yeah.
Good. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, Shani.
Thank you all for joining me for another episode of the Shani Pant Show. I really appreciate you guys hanging out with me every week. You can find all of my links to all my social medias, anything your heart desires at shannypantshow.com. You can even find my amazing merch is back up and running there. And you can email me from there. All the things. All the things. Also, you always ask, how can you help me out with this whole podcast situation? You can subscribe to my podcast. You can leave reviews. You can share it with friends. I appreciate it all. So I am super excited to bring you guys the rest of the season. It's going to be amazing. And I'll see you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.